everybody, it's Alec here, and we are back at it again with the Smashing Brands podcast. We're actually doing the first in-person episode since moving into my new apartment. So I'm here with Puya Hashemi. Is that how you pronounce
That's
it?
That's how he's perfect.
Well, thanks for being here, man.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so Puya and I have known each other for probably about a year now on the dot.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, we met at an event in Orange County, and we continued to stay in touch. He actually used to live in the same apartment building as me, and you know, we've been in a lot of the same social circles and stuff like that, but we haven't had an opportunity to really sit down and especially have me interview him. So I'm grateful that he reached out and that we're making this whole thing happen. So Puya, the first question I like to always ask is, how do you spend your time on planet Earth?
By the way, do you want me to look at the...
You can just look at me, it's fine.
Okay,
you can
all right. Both. How do I spend my time on planet Earth? I guess it just depends on what's happening in my life. Right now, I've been kind of focused on a lot of social media stuff, making Instagram reels, comedy, networking, a lot of traveling, a little bit of business. I have two businesses. One's in marketing, alcohol spirits marketing, and the other one's in technology, from everything from AI, VR, you name it, anything kind of cutting edge technologies. We've owned that for about 16 years.
Awesome. Yeah. So how old are you now?
41.
41.
Yeah.
So how did you get started as an entrepreneur? Because I want to touch on the companies that you have, and also because you're taking comedy really seriously, I want to talk about that too. But from what I know, you have a pretty successful experiential marketing company. Is that right?
Yeah.
So how did that whole thing get started? Or just like your journey as an entrepreneur in general, we'll start with that.
Well, it started kind of when I was really young. Even in middle school, I saw an opportunity to like sell candy in school during recess.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, going to, I think it was Smart and Final with my dad, buying a box of these like lollipop candy, and then during recess selling them for 5 to 6 times the price. It wasn't necessarily for the money. I didn't need the money, but it was doing that. It was providing a service that if I wasn't there, if I didn't exist, none of that would have happened. I don't know. It just gave you this really good feeling that you're doing something of value.
Yeah.
And then ever since then, I kind of took on different smaller projects, different types of businesses. Some were definitely failures and learning experiences. And then there was opportunities to kind of partner with a few friends and start up the two companies I have now, which is Spin Touch and Sip Awards.
And when did you start Spin Touch?
Both of them started the same year, which is kind of crazy. It was in 2009, right during the recession. It was a really, really tough time, and I didn't have anything else going on, so I figured at least one of the two businesses would survive.
Yeah, so that was when you were in your mid-20s.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a job?
Oh yeah, I've worked in the corporate world. I've been a loan officer. I've worked in retail, selling electronics, everything from like Good Guys, which is like Circuit City, to department stores like TJ Maxx.
Nice.
I've done all that and never really enjoyed working for someone. It was always, you know, you got to follow a lot of rules and you can't be creative, and that's one thing I like to do.
Yeah, it's a lot more fun. There's also a lot more risk and a lot more responsibility. But to me, like, entrepreneurship is like the biggest personal development journey in general, right? There's nothing that you can really trade for it in my eyes. And, you know, you've been in business a lot longer than I have, so I'm sure you know all about that. But what was that? Because from what I know, SpinTouch, is that like an Inc. 5000 company?
Yeah, so 2000, during 2000, as you know, all the pretty much kind of business was at a standstill, especially in the trade show, innovation spaces, sales offices.
Were in 2000?
Kind of, I'm sorry, 2020.
Okay, yeah.
2000. 2020 during COVID.
Yeah.
And it was, we didn't have anything going on. Most of our business, about 80% of it, is for trade shows. And they shut down all the trade shows. So we kind of innovated. I created a brand new product to be sold during COVID.
Yeah.
Selling a temperature kiosk, essentially, to allow an automated system rather than, because at the time they required people to stand in front and scan everyone that was coming in, the way you would stay open as a business.
Yeah.
So we created that, and it was, we 10x'd literally overnight. Employees quadrupled, revenues 10x'd. And I mean, the business completely transformed.
Did you have competitors during that time, or?
We did, but the demand was incredible. I mean, we would get companies from like Fortune 500 companies calling us literally every day. The competitive edge we had was all of our software was built in the US. So we had our own development team that gave us a little bit of an edge. So we were able to sell to the US Navy, the Pentagon, Space Force, and so forth, where a lot of our other competitors were getting everything direct from China.
Yeah. Okay, so you come up with this product, like, how do you get the word out about it at that time? You're like, hey, you had all these companies hitting you up. Like, did you have direct contacts where you could, like, and it spread through word of mouth? Or, like, how does that work? Because I'm sure there's a lot of people that would be like, hey, I have this amazing idea, but, like, I don't know how to, like, get in touch with, like, the director of this company or whatever. So right. How did that whole thing happen?
Yeah, so I didn't know it was going to be a success. I initially thought there's a good chance it could be too kind of gimmicky, or people may not trust it as much as a person scanning, because this is a product that's never been out there. It has been internationally, but not in the US. So the only way we could kind of test it is we built a one page landing page. Created some kind of mock-ups, what the product does from A to Z, and launched that within a week. And within the first day, we got 75 inquiries from, I remember PGA Golf was one of the first inquiries.
Is this Google Ads, Facebook Ads?
Google Ads.
Okay.
All Google Ads.
Oh, so had you even developed the product yet?
At that moment, I had talked to some of the manufacturers overseas, but nothing.
I love it.
But what we did was we gave a substantial lead time, because the good thing was all of our competitors were out of stock too. Nobody had them. It was kind of the first people to kind of come in. So we were just taking pre-orders at that point, and everybody was willing to, essentially, because there's nothing available. So we took pre-orders, and within that pre-order time, we were testing different versions, we were overnighting different products over, which was also a headache because of the logistics issue, testing out new software, and then within that, I think it was a 3-4 week window, as soon as we got our next batch, we were already taking pre-orders for the next one and the next one. So it was a very in-demand type of product.
Dang.
Yeah, big investment that had to go in there. And you had to kind of trust your gut at that point and just put everything all in.
Is that what you guys basically did at that point?
That's all we did. 100% of our energy and effort was that for about a year and a half to 2 years.
Dang.
I mean, it paid off. We were Inc. 515 nationwide out of 5,000, out of all the...
Inc. What, 515?
Out of 5,000.
You were what?
So the fastest growing, the 515th fastest growing company in the US.
Yeah.
And I think it was 37th fastest growing in California.
Wow.
And then the next year, we won it again. I don't remember the number. It was probably 2,000, top 2,000, year over year. And that's how they kind of, yeah, fastest growing private company in the US. Not public, yeah.
So can you share how much your revenue grew?
10x. So we did we were doing maybe on a given year, we would probably do revenue wise anywhere between 750 to 1.2 million over the span of 2009 to that year. And then that first year in 2020, we were around 5 million in revenue.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And then the
man.
Following year, about 3 million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you still sell that product, or is it?
No, I guess fortunately we don't, because nobody really needs it. We did actually just sell about 30 of them. I mean, we were selling at the peak, we were selling like 70 a day.
And how much did these cost?
Close to 3,000 each.
Yeah.
So it's a sizable investment, but the alternative for a company was to get a person, pay them an hourly, you know, $15-$20 an hour.
Yeah.
And that's going to cost that much in a month, and mm-hmm. then you're going through COVID for the next couple of years. Who knows? So it's a win-win for everybody to automate the process and to also not. Risk the employees suing you when they get COVID and saying, oh, I got, you guys put me in harm's way.
Yeah.
So it was a great product at the time, but now we're seeing it where it's going into some government facilities and retirement homes, assisted
sense.
Home living. Yeah. I mean, it's just really to take temperature and to kind of ask a questionnaire.
So where do you spend most of your time right now? Because that product, you know, there's not as much demand as there once was. That business kind of fizzled out. Like,
yeah.
How do you, because you told me you spent a couple months traveling, all of that. Like, I guess it changes on the week or the month. But, like, where do you feel like you spend a lot of your energy now?
Right now, it's a lot on social media. I'm kind of, I guess I've had maybe a midlife crisis. I don't know, to kind of step away from the business world.
Well, what happened?
What happened? Well, it's kind of like things that I wanted to always do, but never had the opportunity. I guess during COVID, that kind of gave me the opportunity, because at the time during COVID, mm-hmm. I wanted to kind of make funny videos or entertaining videos and eventually maybe become an actor. But I always thought, you know, what if, you know, an employer, a customer sees these videos and they won't take our business seriously, or they won't take the CEO seriously. But when COVID happened, it's like, oh, the world's ending. Mm-hmm. Might as well, you know, shoot my shot and see what happens. And it kind of did, you know, made some videos, and it was like, okay, nobody cares, and the people that do care, they're very encouraged, and they enjoy, and they're encouraging me.
So how long had you been wanting to do comedy for? Well, when did you put out your first video, and then how long have you been thinking about it?
Oh, I've been thinking about it. I've always loved entertaining since even high school. I used to do a lot of magic in high school. Mm-hmm. That's a way to like meet people and introduce myself and really kind of bring people's guards down, mm-hmm. And bring a smile to their face and, you know, start up a conversation. And then, yeah, during COVID, I kind of put out a couple videos out, mm-hmm. and then I would say 2022, I think, I made a video with Amber Heard, which really took off. That was during the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial.
Right.
And I made this video where I'm going up to her. First video was I'm going up to her and trying to give her a kiss, and she makes a reaction. And that did pretty well. That did about 15 million. Mm. And then another one, I was going up and giving her allergy medicine.
Yeah.
And
I remember that one.
Yeah, that one did exceptionally well. That one did almost 85 million.
Yeah.
So from there, I grew about 100,000 there up to like 120. And yeah, I started making more and more videos. It was just, it was just so enjoyable to kind of test out different videos, make people laugh. And then the messages I would get from around the world were very encouraging, from people telling me that they're going through chemo mm-hmm. and they're having a really rough time, and my videos cheered them up and to keep making videos. And you know, you're getting all of these messages, even in person, people recognizing you and going, oh my God, mm-hmm. your videos are so funny. I shared them with my dad.
Yeah, had that happen pretty frequently?
Oh yeah, yeah, it still does, which is, again, very inspiring to continue. Like everywhere, it happened when I was traveling in Europe, in Romania.
Yeah.
It was this woman that was looking at me at this big party, and she kept looking at me. I'm like, oh man, do I owe someone money here? What's going on? And then she's like, hey, how are you here? I follow you. I'm like, what? That's crazy. And then recently, like last week, I went to the Super Bowl. There was this big party, and this guy was like, Puya? I'm like, oh yeah, you don't know if you've met them, and they're like,
that's how I feel too, at least in Orange County, because you've seen my ads.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so a lot of people have seen those ads, and I see like people looking at me too, like, is this somebody that knows me, or is this somebody that's looking at me?
Right.
And then some people.
And you don't know how to approach it, if you should know their name or not, and then it takes them a minute to
exactly like, have I met you before?
Yeah. No, it's an incredible feeling. As soon as that happens, it happens. If I go out a lot, it happens once a week on average, which is amazing.
About me too, actually. But yeah. That's just here in Orange County. You have scale all across the U.S. So no matter where you would go out in the U.S., you'd probably have people recognizing you.
Yeah, it's incredible.
That's cool.
Yeah, as soon as that happens, I'm like, I want to get home and do another video. It's just, it's like a dopamine release. It's like, wow, this random person and brings so much joy to them. I'm not like pissing someone off. I'm not putting controversial content up. They're like, go fuck your, you know, I'm not supposed to.
It's fine. Doesn't matter. It's funny. I was at Target actually buying furniture, and I was just walking into the door, and then there's this guy he's driving by. He's like, Alec. I'm like,
oh wow.
Hey man, I'm like, do I know you? And he's like, yeah, like I went to one of your events. So I was like, oh wow, okay, cool.
Nice.
Like, nice, man. But yeah, it's an interesting feeling. But I want to know, how did it feel before all the Amber Heard stuff happened, or you making those videos, how many followers did you have?
About 20,000. So that gave me about 100,000.
So how did you get the first 20,000?
Just...
Awesome.
Putting out different random content. I mean, some of them would hit, some of them wouldn't, as you know.
Mm.
Just kind of learning a little bit about what works, what doesn't, based on trial and error. Yeah.
And then you had those two videos, and that probably got you, like 100,000 followers, right?
Yeah, that video did. At one point, I was getting 16 million visitors a day, which was insane.
Wow.
Just like, I mean, I don't think some celebrities get that. 60 million a day just coming to my page. What I didn't do a good job at is I should have kept putting content out during that time, and I wasn't. Because I was like, what's going to top this? And which was a big mistake.
What people think, actually. I've heard that a lot, which is they do something so exceptionally well, mm-hmm. and then they don't want to do the next thing because they're worried it's not going to live up to that.
100%. And that is not the right way of thinking about it. What you should be doing, like right now, I have a couple videos. One's at 20 million, another one's at 35 million, and every day they're gaining more and more attention. But what I'm doing now is putting out more and more content almost every other day, because you're getting so many visitors, and this is really the best time. It's best to do it when you're getting the traffic than trying to get the traffic later.
Yeah, because you have that snowball.
Yeah, yeah. Going. And as long as it's the same theme, I think it's a good idea to put a lot of content out. You know, and then other people will see, oh, he does a lot of the other funny video. Okay, I'll follow him.
So is there like a trick to like, I don't want to say there's a trick to going viral, but it's just like, if you're in the entertainment niche, is it really just as straightforward as being funny, having something entertaining, and then it just goes viral? It just picks up steam? Or how do you describe that?
I think there's a lot of different... there's a lot of different like tweaks you can do to potentially set yourself up for better success. And some things, you know, I might think will do really, really well. Yeah. And I'll put in a considerable amount of time filming it and editing it, you know, almost like 2 days for one video. And wow. It won't do well at all. But I like it. I'm like, this came out really well. But it's just like, it's just not. So the way my metric is it entertaining or funny enough where it's shareable, where the more people that are willing to share it, obviously.
Yeah.
So if you can remove one of the ways you can do that is if you can remove the language barrier. Mm. Right. For example, the Amber Heard video, both of those videos. That's why it went worldwide,
yeah.
too. Because it's all acting out. And, mm-hmm. you know, it doesn't matter if you're a 15-year-old kid from Istanbul or a 90-year-old woman from New York. Mm-hmm. You understand it and you can share it with someone that will also understand it. So, if you can remove the language barrier in a video, you're gonna have a higher shot of success and shareability.
Is there anything else that was kind of like an aha moment for you?
I think having some sort of, well, definitely a hook in the beginning to mm-hmm. capture their attention for someone that's scrolling through that doesn't know who you are, right? You mm-hmm. gotta have something there that they're willing to stay for another 3 or 4 seconds because everyone's attention is very short. So that beginning, and I like to cut down my videos as much as possible. Mm-hmm. Like I'll bring it into my editing app and I'll build it out and then I'll go through it and see if I can brush off, you know, half a second here, another half a second here, a quarter of a second here, and just shave off as much as possible just to get the, without taking away from the impactful moments, right?
Yeah.
So I'll do that, and then I'll even take certain parts of it and speed it up,
mm-hmm.
just to kind of shorten it even more without making it, like none of my videos you can tell are sped up or anything, mm-hmm. and I'll make sure the sound isn't all funky.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's shortening it as impactful as possible, having a nice little hook. It doesn't have to be too crazy, just has to kind of reel it in. And then the end is, I think, the most key important part. It's got to leave them with something of either a surprise or just something that's just like extremely funny where they'll want to... share it with someone, because that's the moment where they'll decide whether, oh, that was stupid, or I gotta send this out.
Yeah, I like the shareability aspect. That's really interesting, because you and I have like completely different content strategies, right? Because you're in the entertainment niche, right? You're an entertainer, while what I say, when people are creating content, you're either entertaining people or you're educating people. And sometimes you can do both.
Sure.
Right? But you're more on the entertaining side and I'm more on the education side. Because your whole social media strategy is get millions of followers. That opens up lots of opportunity. For me, it's like have a very niche audience mm-hmm. that like knows me well, that I've built trust with them so that I can sell them my services.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. So it's a lot different. But I just want to know, as far as creating engaging content, whether you're educating people or entertaining people, what do you think are those commonalities between the two? Because you mentioned the hook, right? I think having a hook is always important. But anything else that comes to mind?
Well, I think educating, it is a little bit more challenging. I could see your job is a little bit more challenging than mine, for sure. I mean,
it's just different goals, right?
Right.
Because you could say that getting clients from Instagram for services is a lot easier to make a certain amount of money than making money off whatever ad revenue that Instagram might give you. So it's just different, you mm-hmm. know what I mean?
Oh, but they yeah, don't it's, pay much.
It's
they
harder. It's harder to grow an audience, for sure. But
for
yeah,
sure.
Continue.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, I mean, it's got the same principle. If the entertainment has got to be enough where the entertainment value has got to be enough where they literally laugh out loud, right? That's how you know they're going to do something with it, engage with it, or share it. Your goal should be they got to be like, have an aha moment. Wow. Okay. I never knew that.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Or, my friend Bill or, Sam needs to see this, that moment of just like, whoa, that's what you should be, you know, striving for, which could be definitely more challenging.
Well, let me ask you this. Let's say SpinTouch started an Instagram account and you're in charge of making all of their Instagram reels. How would you make content for that? Would you make it funny? Or if you weren't going to make it as funny, how would you use, or just in general, how would you use what you know now about growing on Instagram to, let's say, grow a boring marketing company?
Sure. Well, for Sip Awards, my other company, that one I'm actually going to put a little effort into the Instagram, and we have, and it's tough. It's very challenging. In the past, it's been very, very challenging to ever even have anything remotely go viral in that kind of category. But I recently filmed with a marketing agency for a couple videos, and it would be very similar to videos of the, you know, what's his name? Alex Hormozi?
Yeah, is Alex Hormozi.
Yeah, yes. Videos like that where they're very visual. Mm-hmm. I think you do those types of videos too, mm-hmm. right? Where they're very, very visual. You're describing what the product is without being too salesy. Mm-hmm. It's more about talking about the benefit to the customers or the potential customers. So we'll be putting out some of that content to see where it goes. Mm. But yeah, I really haven't even attempted to put my head around it.
Yeah.
I would have to, if I really, you know, if someone put a gun to my head to figure it out, I would probably, the risk I would take it or the direction I would take it is to see if I can make it a more funny, entertaining without devaluing the brand.
Yeah. Just like some jokes here and there or something like that.
I think that would definitely take some trial and error.
That's interesting.
But it's worth it.
Because I've been trying to incorporate more humor into what I do. Because when I hang out with my friends, and even in person, like, I'm generally a lot funnier than people expect me to be in certain aspects. So now it's like, okay, well, when I'm like promoting an event or something like that, how can I like incorporate a couple of jokes in here, or how can I tell a story, you know, with this? And I might even go to ChatGPT to be like, hey, here's my copy, insert a couple of jokes where it makes sense. And actually does a really good job of that.
It does? Wow. I didn't think of that.
Yeah, I was talking about the importance of like building relationships with people, and then I was talking about building the importance of developing relations with people, and ChatGPT said something along the lines of, say, like, it's not like Bitcoin where their value changes like every 5 minutes like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
So. It's incredible how creative that system is.
It's a good servant, but it's not a good leader, right? So you need to know what to tell it, and then it delivers.
Sure. Yeah, but it's only going to be as good as the input you give it.
But once you have that input, it can
do incredible things.
It can do good things. Yeah. I'm just going to restart this real quick. So I want to shift the conversation a little bit towards stand-up now. Well, first of all, before we get into that, it seems like comedy is like your passion right now.
I have a lot of passions. I guess it's for me. Yeah. It's right now. I would say at this stage. Yes, it is.
So like, you know, especially in business, like with SpinTouch, you said, hey, I want to, you know, have this amount of revenue, have whatever, this kind of outward success. What does success look like for you in comedy?
That's a good question. And maybe in some sense I've achieved some of that. Just recognition is one of them. Gaining more and more recognition. But ideally I do want to kind of pivot and change over to maybe some acting roles.
Yeah.
I know it's a very, very tough industry. I mean, everything I've been going into is very competitive and very tough, so that doesn't really worry me. Mm-hmm. I mean, the worst thing that can, I mean, as long as you're doing something that you enjoy, that I enjoy to do, mm-hmm. it's like, there's no failure in a sense. I'm not depending on it for any yeah. kind of monetary reasons. Like if I put a video out on Instagram that I really enjoyed making, or I think it's funny and it doesn't do well,
yeah.
it's like, okay, it's disappointing for a few minutes, but it's like, okay, whatever. It's cool on my wall. It's cool for people to see it. I did it for a reason. It's not necessarily a fail or success based on what the algorithm did that day.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, for me, as long as I'm doing something that I enjoy, one of them being, yeah, acting, meeting new people, meeting people in the industry, learning about new techniques and new subject matter of the entertainment world, which I probably know very little, like 2% of everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's all kind of just, it's all part of life.
Yeah.
See where it goes.
What would you say some of your goals are though? Like, do you have like, cause you started doing stand up.
Yeah. Right? Recently, about maybe 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Cause as I was doing these videos, meeting people and they're like, oh, you know, you're funny. You're a stand up comedian too, or you do stand up? And like, no, I don't. What? You don't?
Yeah,
and then, I'm like, maybe I should. And then, at one point I was like, okay, let me look into it. I had this agent that was going to put together a show that essentially would be a few influencers and they would put together a stand-up show, which I've never done.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, this is a way I can get into it. And then she was just lagging and she never ended up doing it. But what I did was I just started telling people that I'm going to be doing stand-up.
Yeah.
And at that moment, the way I do things is if I tell enough people, it gives me the accountability
mm-hmm.
to make it happen, because now it's embarrassing if you don't do it. Now you don't want to hear the fact that, wait a minute, didn't you tell me like you're going to do stand up in a couple months, whatever happened with
yeah.
that? And then you have to explain like, oh, I got busy. I was traveling, whatever the excuse is, it's still like, it's stupid. So if you tell enough people, that's my technique. You tell enough people.
You got to go in on it.
You get the yeah. accountability. It's kind of like, you know, you want to lose weight, take a picture in the mirror, put it on your Facebook or Instagram and say, hey, I'm going to lose 50 pounds or 20 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you don't, yeah. you know, it's there. So you're going to get up every morning and you're going to use your fear to kind of launch you
mm-hmm.
to do what you've been procrastinating. And then, yeah, I did that. And then I had to like figure out a way to do stand-up.
And what was that?
I took a stand-up class.
Nice.
So I invested money, time, every week, like 5-6 hours a week for the next 3 months. And yeah, had a team, and that was additional accountability, because you have a team of people that want to be a comedian, and you got to meet with them and listen to their jokes and have them listen to your jokes.
Yeah, yeah.
So again, it's kind of like going to the gym with a friend. So you can't back out of it.
Yeah,
you back
accountability.
Out, like, what happened to Puya? Oh, you didn't show up. Like, it's embarrassing. Some of these people work like 2 or 3 jobs. They're
yeah.
moms. They're fuck. You know, they're doing so much. And I'm, what's my excuse?
Yeah.
So yeah, that gave me more accountability. That I had, you had to do homework. Essentially, write like 15 jokes a week, which was very challenging. And then at the end of that, they put on a whole show in LA. And then yeah, that's how I kind of did it. You just put yourself out there and. If then you really don't have an opportunity to fail, your mind will create a way, at least mine does, a way to make it happen, because you don't want to face that consequence of yeah, I got busy.
Yeah, no, I like that. So how did it go?
It went very well. The first show, my first show was like I mean, I couldn't even explain. It was incredible. It was an incredible feeling. Had a lot of friends and family show up.
Yeah.
But since then, I've performed at the Comedy Store, which is a really well-known stand-up venue. I think I've performed five or six times. It's great. It is very, very challenging still. Because you gotta memorize, you gotta come up with some new material, and you gotta try it out and test it out and open mics. It's a work. It's a job. It's tough, but it's fun. But yeah, I think that will be a way I can kind of pivot and go into the next phase of acting.
Yeah. So that's the goal then, is become an actor.
Yeah, we'll see where that goes. Yeah, for now, I mean, yeah. Well, I'll do some, like, maybe commercials and little baby steps. And I think everything I've done up to this point of having a social media presence, stand-up, maybe the magic, they all kind of help each other out in just being in front of people. And
yeah, so how do you grow your stand-up career? What does that look like?
Oh, you just got to do more and more shows.
Yeah.
For that.
So you get invited by people to do.
Yeah, there's different promoters, and you just got to reach out. There's a lot of opportunities, especially if you are refining your jokes and going up to. Like, you can go to open mics. Anyone can go to an open mic.
Yeah.
There's really. There's all sorts of people there. There's really, really ridiculously not funny people there, and then there's pretty funny people there. And it's just a way to go out there and test out your materials. And there's nothing, you're not going to get booed off.
Yeah.
That's where you kind of go and test it out. I met a stand-up comedian that would go to six of them a week. Mm-hmm. And or two a day. If you really want that, you just go to more shows. You just write more jokes, you see which ones hit, you record yourself, you practice, and eventually, yeah, you get more and more invites, and yeah, put it on social media and invite more people. I mean, it's pretty simple. It's a very simple formula, but to do the work, just like anything, it takes a lot of drive.
Have you thought of marketing yourself?
For what?
Like building your own stand-up community and promoting yourself?
Like my own show? No, not right now.
I'm not saying you have to promote your own show, like you're the sole act, but you're the one orchestrating.
Oh, bringing comedians and setting up a thing. Yeah, there's actually a comedian that I met, every promoter that I do, that I've worked with, they are a comedian. They're either the headliner or they're part of it. And then they bring people in, they make a little bit of money, and they pay out a little bit of that to the comedians. Yeah, that's another job, right? They're doing it to make kind of a living off of it. And then your focus goes into managing that. But yeah,
if you were your own promoter and you had a lot of people that were interested in going to your shows, not just for you, but the act of you doing it, that might be a way to get yourself out there in a faster way.
For sure.
So here's an idea for you. You know, you've seen my ads, right? I'm attracting entrepreneurs.
Yes.
Hey, Orange County, if you're an entrepreneur that's interested in growing your network, meeting like-minded people, and expanding your knowledge, you gotta sign up for my events list. But if you said, hey, LA, if you're interested in comedy, in jokes and blah, 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 sign up for my events list. Mm-hmm, so that's a way to get local attention.
That's true.
And to build a list of people that are interested in going to your comedy shows.
That's true.
So you're not at the mercy of somebody inviting you to a show. You can host your own shows,
right?
Not just with you, but with other acts. Or just use that as leverage for getting in the bigger show. Say, hey, I have this huge list of people that I can bring. I can bring you 50 people.
Yeah.
You know, so that's awesome. A way to leverage that. It's just an idea.
No, for sure. That would, I do definitely need to think about more creative ways of leveraging my my followers right now.
I'm not monetizing anything. It's ridiculous how little Instagram pays. I don't have my own merch. I don't have, I've brought people to my stand-up show, but yeah, that's another area hopefully in 2024, I'll be kind of focused in and figure out some opportunities where I'm giving back to them and they're kind of putting me in different opportunities there too.
Because you've done a really good job of building your brand as a whole, but if you built your brand more locally as a, as a comedian, that would just give you access to people.
For sure. Yeah.
That you otherwise
Los Angeles is probably one of the bigger, my biggest following city.
Nice.
I think one. Yeah, definitely. And a few other countries around the world, but yeah, you LA County, Orange County, which is interesting because I guess maybe it's because I tag a lot of locations there.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's why.
Why you have most of your followers there?
Yeah.
Well, don't they mainly come from your reels stuff?
Right. Yeah. But where I tag my reels in different places, yeah. But I've traveled a lot. Like a lot of my recent videos are. I don't know if you noticed, there are a lot of like airplane ones and airport ones.
Yeah.
And I don't use green screens on any of those.
Oh, nice.
Which is a challenge because you got to look stupid in front of a bunch of, you know, hundreds of people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's fun. That's why.
What's been the funnest video that you've made?
The one I just recently did, I really like it. And it's doing really well. The one I'm talking to the baby about. Did you see that one?
I'm not sure I saw that one.
Yeah, so I'm talking to this little baby, and I'm telling him it's okay. He just recently broke up with someone, and I'm like, hey, it's going to be okay. And he's like, yeah. And he's like a little baby. He's like maybe 6 months old. Doesn't even talk. He just and then I'm just coaching him down. But that one's really was really. I mean, making them. They're fun to make for sure. Like I made a video where I'm like filming an elephant and then there's water being spilt on me.
Yeah.
That was fun. Yeah, some of them are really wonky and weird and strange and I got to do it in public or wear a dress or, you know, it's embarrassing. Some of these are embarrassing, but it gets me out of my, oh, you saw that one?
Yeah.
So some of them are really, and I did that in the building we lived in.
Nice.
Or you lived in. But I had to do it. I wanted to do it at like, you know, 2 a.m. or something. So
were you at like the gym or something? Were you at the gym?
That one? No. That one was in my building complex.
Okay.
So yeah, it was a little further away, but who knows who's coming home at 2 a.m.
What's that like going at? Where did you get the dress?
Amazon. I get all my props on Amazon. Yeah. What's nice is like, I'll see a video that I want to do. And then I can buy all the props on Amazon, get it the next day, and then start shooting and seeing where it goes. Yeah, Amazon has everything.
Where do you get these ideas from?
From other videos or other creators. Like, even like the Amber Heard video, it was another creator that was sitting next to a TV, and he kind of like just gave her a napkin, and then she gave the napkin back, and he was sitting down. And there wasn't a lot of reaction, and it did okay. And then I'm like, okay,
I could do it way better.
But that's really great concept. So I filmed it kind of similar to that, and then I watched it. I'm like, wait, I can make it way better. And then I just, that's what some videos take like hours and hours because you're filming it, you're editing it, and you're like, wait a minute, I didn't notice that. I can put like, sometimes I'll make a whole video. And here's another thing I do. Some of my videos, sometimes you notice it, but I'll put something in the background or in the foreground that has nothing to do with the video. That's just there for comments.
Yeah.
Right. Like a video I did, and most people don't see it, but the people that see it, they'll like comment a lot about it. Like a recent video I did was I was eating something, and then on the side you see this like almost this like blow up doll lady back. Did you see it?
No.
Okay. And then, with a wig on and everything, like decorated, like kind of like leaning over. But you don't see it and you're like, unless you watch it. But that's another trick to kind of engage your audience in a different form. And you could do that even when you're teaching someone. So like you're talking to them about something about business and there could be like,
something funny in the background.
I don't know. Yeah, you could have a shoe in a blender. And then people are like, what the hell? Why is there a shoe in his blender?
Yeah.
Something like that, just right in the background. That's a good one.
Yeah,
you should do that.
I should do something like that.
Yeah, and then people will just be like asking you about it. And they're like, what? Why does he have it? And you're like, where do you keep your shoes? And you just, well, I play along. I'm just like, what do you mean?
So, I'll stick him in the Nutribullet right over there.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like I need a better blender.
A big blender, put it like a Nike shoe in there. I think that'll be fun.
I can ask ChatGPT for some ideas.
There you go. Background of things you can put back there, or something on you, or clipped on you, or some, or like have a banana like instead of a mic attached to you, or something, or strawberry, or something. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
But those are the things you should consider doing. And if you do it in every video, there might be some people that'll just follow you just to see.
Yeah,
the next,
look
just
I,
to see.
I like this idea
it.
A lot. This is cool.
Yeah, see, I'm a good consultant.
So if you were to, let's say you were consulting yourself, let's say the Puya now is starting with the Puya who had just started in, what, 2020, making comedy videos?
Yeah.
What advice would you tell yourself that would have allowed you to progress faster?
All the things I just mentioned, plus make more videos. Okay. If you want to grow, make more videos. It's the same price. It doesn't cost you money if you're putting out one video a week to one video a day. Put it out there. If you don't know if it's going to be good or not, put it out there. And what is nice, a lot of people don't think about this, but what is nice about the algorithm is if it's not a good video or people aren't engaging with it, your entire audience doesn't get to see it.
Yeah.
That's good. That's kind of a good thing. It's like you're worried, oh, what if I put this out and people don't like it and they'll all unsubscribe? They won't. But if you put it out and it doesn't do well, it's going to show it to 4% of your audience. It was worth a shot.
Yeah.
And if it does really well, it'll show it to everyone. So that algorithm could actually be very beneficial in that sense. So it should not keep you in fear. You shouldn't be always in fear of, oh, what if that... Just make it the best you can, and then just keep putting more and more content out.
Yeah. What sort of movie roles do you see yourself being in?
Oh, I don't know.
Like a movie? Like, what types of movies do you really like? They're like, I would love to be in something like that.
I like both. I like, the comedy and action. I think action would be really
action
cool.
Action comedy?
Yeah, or action comedy. Or maybe a little bit of drama. I mean, I've never done movies, so I don't know what I'm like. I never knew, for example, stand-up, I never knew how difficult or challenging it would be until you really don't know until you do it. So I don't know. I might like to do like little sitcoms or something. But I do definitely, it's a bucket list thing, and it's you know, the next step. I always want to kind of keep growing and going to the next phase. Life is short, you know. You never know what's going to happen. You don't know if you're going to where you're going to be at, what's going to happen. And right now I'm in a position where I don't have a family, so I don't need to really rely on certain things. I'm a little bit more free.
Do you want a family?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I got it. You know,
Have you been married?
No, I haven't.
It's hard out here in Orange County, man.
It's very hard.
I think it's hard everywhere, but I think especially here, it's...
The dating life is very challenging. Yeah.
You know, I heard, I think it was Ty Lopez who said this. He said, if you live closer, the closer you live to water, it's more difficult.
Mm.
While if you're like in the Midwest, you know, or something like that, or in Central America, the market's kind of like a lot different, you know, because like if you're in like LA, Miami, New York, like those are all really like uppity places. They're going to be maybe a little bit more superficial. It's more about that social climbing, all of that.
Yeah.
Well, if you go like, you know, middle America, it wouldn't be like that. That was just a perspective that I heard of, like, maybe that's true, but.
Yeah, I mean, you should be able to spot certain people, whether they're fake or they're looking for certain things. But you know, there's definitely good people in LA. They just might not be where you go, right?
Yeah.
They might be in the library or out just gardening or in yoga class. But yeah, there's it's definitely a challenging place. It's got its pros and cons, but you're just gonna have to kind of figure it out.
Yeah, that's the thing. It has, like, you know, what people say about LA or Santa Monica. I used to live in Santa Monica, but you can apply this to LA itself. It has everything you want and everything you don't want.
Yes.
Right? So
you just have to be, I guess, strategic about it. But yeah, like, I think, you know, you go out with a person, or a guy or a girl, and hang out with people. Mm. You should be able to kind of capture who they are. Mm-hmm. Within a few hours.
Yeah,
it's that
exactly, and that's why, like,
it's hard to hide things. I think people keep talking about, oh, this person's fake. I mean, you should know that fairly quickly.
Yeah, because they're trying to hide things. It might look like they're trying to hide things.
Yeah.
So it's like, well,
yeah.
What's going on?
I've been fortunate enough to meet good people like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And they're out. Like I said, they're out there. There's bad people and there's good people. And you want to spend your time with people that kind of inspire you. And there's people, there's obviously, there's women that think the things I'm doing are really cool and interesting. And then there's other ones that think it's, like, weird and awkward and embarrassing, or there's all sorts of people. But mm-hmm. obviously I want to hang out with the people that think it's that are supporting me, right? That I keep getting the motivation to continue.
Yeah.
That push me and go forth, and been fortunate enough to have that around my circle.
Yeah, me too, man. I think there's been a lot of great people that have put on events, you know, in the area. As we were talking about, I don't know how many there are right now, but I think that's a great place to meet people. It's just like curated environments, right, that are aligned with people that have similar interests as you.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I'm a local community builder, and I like to say, hey, if you want to meet, because people in Orange County, they complain all the time, I don't know how to meet people, whatever, it's so difficult, this and that. And I say, hey, you gotta figure out, you gotta make a list of 10 things that you're interested in, and you gotta go out and, you know, find events or experiences or environments that relate to that, right?
Yeah.
And that's part of what I do, you know, with, like, my own events. I try to bring together mainly just a bunch of, like, business owners that want to grow and, like, connecting with people, which mm-hmm. is its own niche. Mm-hmm. But, like, at the end of the day, like, we're especially niche people, you know? Like, there's not a lot of people that you'll meet as a percentage of the population that are like you and I, right? So 97% of people are probably not going to vibe with us, but it's about finding where that 3% is. And I think we've both done a decent job of figuring out how to do that.
Yeah. And it's, I would, you know, this year I'm going to try and collaborate more of my videos with other creators to make, you know, interesting comedy with another comedy comedian, right?
Yeah.
I think that would, that's a really great way of growing and getting a new audience. I think that would be great for you too, for sure, to collaborate. And that's probably the fastest way, without going viral, to kind of be in front of a whole new, fresh audience.
Yeah.
That's within your niche.
Yeah, I have an interesting question for you, shifting the conversation a little bit. What do you feel like has been the hardest thing that happened to you that turned out to be the greatest blessing?
I don't know if it was one thing or maybe multiple, but, you know, we were talking about it's hard to meet people in LA and things like that. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, certain people come into your life, and then if they leave, you're like, oh, I'm not going to, you know, both in the romantic world and the friendship world, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're like, you know, that person got me into those types of venues and events, or that person kind of helped me with certain types of videos or content.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, as long as you have the confidence in yourself to kind of persevere and just go through,
But is there like a specific instance? That's what I'm asking you.
Specific instance. That was the... Oh, okay. I would say that then in that sense, the biggest thing that's happened was, yeah, I think COVID. It was when COVID hit.
And you had to like completely change
your business. Of my businesses. One was in events marketing.
Right.
We basically bring alcohol in from around the world, and then we have an event where people taste alcohol.
Oh, nice.
Okay, yeah, cool. Sip Awards.
Right.
And then they taste alcohol, and then they basically rate them.
Yeah.
And then that's how they get the gold medal, silver medal on an alcohol bottle.
Yeah.
So that business completely would have had to stop because of COVID. And then the other one was in trade shows. So I expected both of them to potentially have been bankrupt within a year. But for both businesses, the SpinTouch, we pivoted and brought a new product in to sell. For Sip Awards, we pivoted and we provided in-home kits. So we poured the alcohol in these tubes, and then we hand delivered them through LA, OC, and San Diego. And that actually ended up saving us money, and it allowed us to grow more judges and bring in more brands because we could scale it out more.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So we took you know, catastrophe for the business. We shifted it, and we were able to kind of shift it and actually build a stronger, for both businesses, they both became stronger after what happened.
So I want to know, when you wake up every day, what motivates you? Because it's like, you know, you've had such a journey as an entrepreneur. You've, you know, you've had successful businesses. You've had this sit in comedy. You've been traveling. Like, what do you feel like excites you right now?
Experiences from, for me, it's like coming up or doing something new almost every day or every week or every month.
So this is something I wanted to talk to you about, because I feel like a lot of people struggle with this thing called shiny object syndrome, which is like you see something and it sounds really fun.
Yeah.
And then you take your distraction off of maybe what you should be doing or what's working or you're having some success at, and you're going towards something else because it seems new or interesting. It's like we're always chasing this like novelty factor. So how do you like balance the being able to try and do new things where it's productive without like not sidetracking yourself too much?
I think what I do is I don't sidetrack. I tend to do things that I know how to do and do it well, like making videos, where what I think I should be doing is maybe something different or new or trying something. It's actually hard for me to do something brand new.
Yeah.
I always have a challenge with starting something totally, totally new. I want to do it. I'll save it in my notes or something.
Yeah.
But I'll postpone it, or I'll procrastinate doing it. I have a major problem with procrastination. I like to do things that are easier, and I will get immediate gratification maybe, or possibly just easier and no gratification, but I just know I can do something. There's a lot of different things that I want to like start. For example, I want to start like a longer form YouTube channel. That's one of the things I want to do.
What would you do with that? I'm curious. Like, how does that play in? Because you're so used to making like short form content. What does like a long form channel look like for you?
Yeah. So that would be, I do another thing that I haven't really posted a lot about.
Yeah.
Is doing comedy with scammers. So the scammers that call people. I don't know if you've heard of my stories. I sometimes put a glimpse of it.
I think I've seen it. Yeah.
So I'll get the scammer to do really strange and weird things on the phone or send me weird pictures. It's a whole, some of them last an hour, or some of them could take weeks or a month.
Yeah.
Where they're just really hooked in. But those could be really interesting, exciting stories. What I want to do is like animate them and make them really entertaining.
Yeah.
Those would be longer form, but that's a whole new genre, right? I got to get an animator. I got to do the video editing. I got to get really a good sound engineer to like fix it up. It's a whole nother project in itself.
Yeah.
And I've been procrastinating. I really need to do that this year. That's one of the things that is one of my goals. But similar, I'll keep doing the reels because I get such an immediate burst of dopamine and gratification of, oh shit, this one hit a million.
Yeah.
Whereas that will take, that's almost starting from ground zero and building a name and building like a storyboard and a whole nother type of content where you have to build the longer form and see where to cut it off to make it two videos, three videos, and make it a series. But I think everyone I've shown it to absolutely just like loves it. I just need to put the time into it, which I should.
So how do you like know at this stage like where the opportunity lies and like what you should focus on?
I don't. I just do it, and if it works, it works.
Yeah.
You never know. Just like in my business, I didn't know a lot of the things I've done. A lot of people told me it wouldn't work, but if you don't do it, and you're going to sleep, and you're waking up, and you're always having that in the back of your mind. Months go by, years go by, a decade goes by, and you're like, I should have tried it at least once. It didn't cost anything, or it didn't take that much time. I did all this other crap. Why didn't I do that? The regret is a lot more impactful to like have on your shoulder.
Yeah.
For me, so it's worth doing it at least a couple times to say, oh, I've done that and it didn't work, or I've done it and it created a company for me and we're here. Like all the greatest creators you're seeing or business owners, they weren't 100% guaranteed on any level.
Mm-hmm.
They just knew they had to at least try it and try it over and over and over until they were either bankrupt or tried a couple times, and some of them got lucky early and some of them didn't. But it's something that needs, for me at least, I need to give it a go and try it now than in 10 years from now.
Yeah, you have this mentality of like really going after things, putting in the action. Was there like a time in your life where you like weren't doing those actions? Like anything that you like regretted in the past that you wish you would have done or you would have acted on sooner?
Not necessarily. It might have been doing it earlier than what I ended up doing it. So it might have been doing also a side. I've actually always had like a side hustle, even when I was working for these corporations.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's just something within me to provide my own unique product or service or entertainment to the world without a corporation kind of guiding me, just to do it on the side or to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And luckily, you know, I've succeeded enough times where it's allowed me the freedom to continue to expand on those things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I love that, man. Well, I have one last question for you.
Okay.
All right. Which is, so let's say it's the end of your life. Okay.
You're like right now or?
Oh, later on.
Okay.
Or it could be right now. Either okay. one. Let's say it's the end of your life. You're on your deathbed. It could be in the near future or 50 years from now. What are three truths that you would leave the world with? You can take a second to think about
this.
You mean
to leave the world with, or like to educate my like son? Or my...
Either anybody. It could be yourself,
yeah.
It could be the world. Your three truths. What are Puya's three truths about the world?
One would be believe when someone tells you something about themselves that's negative, believe them.
Mm-hmm.
If someone says that they aren't this type of person or they are... Mm-hmm. they are actually bad in this sense. Mm-hmm. We like to go, no, that's not you.
Yeah.
Usually people don't admit something negative about themselves. And when they do, it's usually true.
Okay.
That can save you a lot of time. And it ends up being...
Okay, so like value people's honesty when they
reveal something negative about themselves.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Kind of being a vulnerable moment, even if they're kind of joking around a little, unless they're being extremely sarcastic. But
yeah.
That seems to be something that I've noticed is consistent. You'll usually never get something if you don't ask for it.
Yeah.
What do they say? A closed mouth is always hungry. Something
along those lines.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you want something, no one's going to just give it to you. You have to ask for it. Mm-hmm. Whether it be a raise or to work with someone, or, you know, to request more funding for a project, whatever it is, mm-hmm. you gotta ask for it if you want it. I don't know, the third one I gotta think about.
It's all good, man. We're chilling.
In the sense of, and I think it's important to always go after what you want to do in your life. Like if you have a dream or something in your life that you want to accomplish or do, I think it's vital to do it, because to live with that regret,
yeah,
is much, much, much worse than failing at what you wanted to do. At least you can kind of leave at peace and say, I did that. Whether it's to do something big or to talk to a certain person or to go after, it could be, you know, completely outside the realm of realistic possibility.
Yeah.
But if you want to make $1 million in a month, to go all out and try to do that, or whatever it is. It could be, I want to meet a certain celebrity, or I want to work with a certain entrepreneur, or I want to go into a certain field, comedy or acting, yeah. Or I want to own my own business selling whatever, socks. Mm-hmm. You've got, you know, you have to do it. It's not as hard as you think. It. Everyone has the idea. Like, everyone has an idea, I think. I mean, I hear everyone's ideas to me. They always give me their ideas. They're like, oh, you should do this.
Yeah,
you should
yeah.
do that. They have their own ideas for themselves, too. But it's rare that they ever go after it. Mm-hmm. It's very rare. It's like... I think it's less than 5% of the world. They have the idea.
Yeah.
They have the idea. And then they always talk about how they didn't do their idea. They're like, oh, you know, Uber, I thought of that like a long time ago. Or, you know, this, like they're almost waiting to.
So I want to know, what was it about your upbringing that didn't make you part of that 95%? Like what's responsible? Is it, I want to know, well, part of it's nature, right? And then it's like the whole nature and nurture debate, you know? Mm-hmm. But I want to know, like, why do you feel like you've been able to take so much action in your life towards doing what you want?
I think one is my parents were very motivating, as long as it was something that didn't have a substantial amount of risk.
Yeah.
They were very positive, and they were very... supportive, and they always wanted me to give it a try, or they didn't really push me off of it, as long as I was doing, you know, my homework and whatever other normal processes that I would have to do. That's why I had a lot
become
of
a doctor.
They wanted that. They did want that. But eventually, yeah, I didn't go that path, which they were disappointed initially. But yeah, I think that support system helped a little bit.
Yeah.
And just to build up the confidence. And then I've always, for some reason, I've always been fairly positive and was able to always see some form of success in everything, even things that didn't pan out. I always saw some form of success in it that allowed me to do something else. I always saw an opportunity. It's almost like, I don't know if you watch Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Have you ever seen that?
I've seen it, yeah.
But the way they go about creating a new project or doing something, they almost act like as if they've been the most successful people on the face of the planet. They act like they know everything about the subject. But something like that where you don't have to be that level of confidence, but I'm a little bit more of a risk taker as well.
Yeah.
I don't mind gambling. I do enjoy gambling here and there.
Yeah.
So I think that has a lot to do with it. If you're able to, if you have enough confidence in yourself and you're able to risk your time and money on yourself, then you can get there. I think if you don't have that, you have to somehow build up that level of confidence in yourself.
So for someone that doesn't have that level of confidence in themselves or doesn't feel like they have it, what advice would you give them?
I think that it's a hard advice. It's something hard for them they have to do. If they do it, I think there's a high level of success.
Yeah.
They have to put that accountability on themselves by letting people know that they're going to do this.
Mm.
So that's another way. Like, you're starting a new business, you need to tell people you're starting it, and then you need to get them almost involved. Yeah. And then now it's your like word. Now it's your reputation on the line. Now you've told this guy that, you know, whatever, you're building a sock factory. You've told him you wanted their fabrics.
Yeah.
And now you're like, shit, I gotta make sure by next month I have something in place before I meet them. Almost you're meeting or partner with someone that will hold you accountable, and now you're both, you know, you're going to show up there. Because if you're going to the gym by yourself, you can skip it. But if you have a gym partner, you're embarrassed to skip it.
Yeah.
So if you have
accountability,
it's all about the accountability. So it almost forces you to do that. I don't, you know, a lot of people, if you really, really want to do it, I think that's the shortcut. That's the hack to get people involved, to hold you accountable. People that you actually admire and they admire you and you have a good reputation with, because you don't want to disappoint them.
Yeah.
And I guess you've been able to disappoint yourself enough. You don't want it out in the public.
Yeah.
Because I think people generally are always embarrassed or more embarrassed of what others will think of them over what they're thinking of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They're always, you know, men and women, they always want to look good out in public.
Yeah, but no one's really looking at the end of the day.
No one is.
Yeah.
But if you put yourself out there, now you force yourself to, it's like a sink or swim kind of thing.
I still don't feel like anybody's really watching me, to be honest. I think some people are, but it's like
But if you do that, you'll imagine it more. You'll wake up in the morning.
If you think people are watching you, that will give you more motivation
100%.
To go out and execute.
Yeah. You've put a post up, you've told people, you've kind of created the steps where now people will, it'll take one person to ask you about it. Hey, you're starting a new company. What is it about?
Yeah.
Now it's like, oh, okay. I gotta get home. I gotta actually do it.
Yeah, I think there's a balance of like that, like wanting people to watch you for the accountability, but also recognizing that not to be like super hard on ourselves and pretend that, you know, we look this and that, because at the end of the day, a lot of people are living their own lives. So like it's a balance between.
But it does both things. So you post something online, and then you're kind of doing the things you have to do to achieve that. And then if you do a few things and you post those things, mm-hmm. like you bought your first samples or whatever, and you post those, you'll get some responses and feedback, and people are like, "Oh, that's really cool. How did you even get started? Or mm-hmm. where are you at? Or how much are whatever it is?"
Yeah.
That's positive reinforcement. You're like, "Okay, I got to continue.
Yeah.
I got to continue to do that." And you're getting each one of those steps, and you're wanting to post more.
Yeah.
you don't have to post your failures. You can post more of your successes.
Yeah. I think if I was to sum up some of the stuff that you're saying, like what's really helped you is the positive reinforcement of taking little steps and gradually increasing those, as well as the accountability.
Yeah.
And recognizing that you can't live with regret and you got to do what you got to do.
Absolutely.
All right, man.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being on, man.
Absolutely.